When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
They are Sports Illustrated.
It's amazing.
This incredible body of work.
I really appreciate the integrity.
Everything you do is well done.
You guys do a great job.
We love it. What can we say?
He's Chris Mannix.
He's employed by Sports Illustrated.
The announcer's got it in for me.
There you go.
This is the Crossover NBA Podcast.
You have a problem with it? Build a team that can beat them.
Hosted by the one and only.
Oh, thank God.
Thank God.
Chris Mannix.
All right, holiday week edition of the podcast, and recording this a little bit early, so we're going to do something a little bit different. Talk a little bit of the NBA draft with January just around the corner. You're starting to see a lot of draft boards pop up. Our own Jeremy Wu has his stuff up there as well, and he's kind enough to join me here on the podcast. What's up, Jeremy?
Hey, Chris. What's going on? I'm flying to Vegas tomorrow for this whole week of G League Showcase and high school stuff. And Kentucky has two games, so it's kind of a crazy week. But I'm heading up there, so just getting ready for that.
Nice, nice. Well, I want to get into a lot of different things with you, just, you know, the draft in general. But I do want to ask you before we start anything about LeBron James's son, Bronny, LeBron Jr., who we kind of heard about in the last week or so with LeBron flying up to Akron to see LeBron Jr. play against his former team. And look, he's only a freshman right now, but he's kind of a relevant piece to this NBA puzzle because, you know, the general thinking is that however long LeBron plays, he would like the opportunity at some point to play in the NBA with his son. Now, two things have to happen. One, LeBron's going to have to stay healthy enough to play for, you know, you figure at least three more years, assuming the one-and-done rule gets done away with in that time. But beyond that, I mean, his son's going to have to prove he's a high-level NBA player, able to play at the NBA level. Give me your early thoughts on LeBron's son. I mean, is he – what do people say about him? What do you think about him as an NBA prospect?
I've seen Bronny play three or four times in the last 6 months. I saw him last week, and you know, it's interesting because NBA teams obviously have not had a chance to scout him. He's so young. He hasn't been at any of this stuff yet, any of the national, you know, things that teams are allowed to go see. So, you know, you look at, you know, the gene pool obviously is going to be in his favor. But it is kind of early to call. The thing that I've liked about him is, you know, he clearly, like, understands how to play. He doesn't play entitled. You know, he didn't walk onto this team, you know, chucking shots. You know, he understands. He's a freshman. He understands. And that's probably the biggest misconception, and that's kind of the funny thing about this, is you have people flocking to see Sierra Canyon games, paying at the door to see Bronny, and then Bronny is a role player who shoots four or five times a game and scores 4 or 5 points, right? But you know, he looks like a freshman. You know, that's not necessarily a good or a bad thing. He needs to grow. You know, right now he's sort of a combo guard who is, you know, 6'1 or 6'2. So he doesn't have a lot of size. But again, you know, genetics are great. And, you know, it won't be surprising if he shoots up. And if he ends up being 6'5 or 6'6 and he can, you know, dribble, pass, and handle and shoot a bit, you know, I think he's got a shot. And definitely I think we'll end up being a legitimate high major college player. But, you know, I've been hesitant to heap any additional pressure that, you know, that kid is dealing with enough of that, I think.
Yeah, I mean, God, the amount of pressure. I don't think there's ever been, you know, look, over the next 3+ years, I'm not sure we'll have ever seen a player under the type of spotlight that LeBron Jr. is under, just because his father will still be playing and his father will still be traveling to his games and there'll be high-profile events, I mean, televised events. He's going to have a lot of eyeballs on him over the next couple of years. It's not really fair for a kid that's, you know, in his mid-teens to be dealing with stuff like this, but there'll certainly be a lot of attention paid and a lot of people wondering just if he's going to be able to play at the highest level. I'm interested to see how it all pans out. I mean, I've seen highlights of him. He certainly looks athletic, looks the part, and as you mentioned, the DNA is undeniable. But you know, it's a lofty level to kind of live up to have to be the next coming of LeBron. So we'll see what happens with him. But I was curious of your thoughts on him at the top, because he's been in the news and is going to be in the news a lot, I think, moving forward. All right, let's look into your recent draft piece where you ranked the top 60 players. Interesting name at the top, Anthony Edwards out of Georgia. He began the year at number one in your mock draft and stays there in your most recent top prospect list. What is it about Anthony Edwards that you like so much, and how likely is it that we see some consistency there with Anthony Edwards remaining in that top spot?
You know, my approach to ranking guys is you kind of have to, like, lose the number one ranking. So I started the season with him there. I was getting a little concerned. He was being, you know, I thought he'd be inconsistent, but he wasn't great. And then, you know, he goes to Maui and has that big second half and, you know, reminds everybody why, you know, he's so highly regarded. You know, I have him one right now. I think it's partially in lieu of better options. So it's sort of a referendum about how I feel, you know, about the rest of these guys. More so than, like, I have a firm belief that Anthony Edwards is going to be a star. And I don't want to, you know, it's good to, you know, be clear. Sometimes it's hard to, you know, get that across when you're just like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you know, in a list. But I think there is a lot to like with Edwards. You know, I know their staff has been really happy with his willingness to be coached at Georgia. He has never really been, you know, pushed and, you know, been in a situation where there was, you know, structure every day, you know, getting better. I think they're working with him on the right stuff. As far as, you know, he has a tendency to sort of chill out a little bit too much. And when he does turn it on, it looks great, but then he still settles for too many threes. And, you know, he looks like a freshman. But, you know, you look at his body type and you look at just the raw talent and what he can do right now, without, you know, having a very refined skill set. And I think that's pretty impressive. You know, one executive remarked to me that, you know, probably if he were in last year's draft, he would have been ahead of RJ Barrett. He would have had him, you know, behind the other two guys, but he would have had him, like, you know, in third. So, you know, if that gives you some context, I mean, his upside is really there. But, you know, the full season body of work, I guess, is what people are going to want to see. I don't think it's a lock that he goes one. But for me right now, if I had to do it, just with the, you know, LaMelo Ball not shooting the ball well, and with Wiseman being a center, and, you know, just everything that comes attached to that. We talked about that before. But for me, you know, Edwards is one, just in the event he sort of becomes, you know, a scorer who can really anchor your team. Granted, he's very far off from being that, so there's risk. But I think for now that's the answer.
Do you see a lot of fluidity in that top spot? I mean, the top three guys you have in your rankings, Edwards, you know, 6'5 guard. You have LaMelo, more of a point guard in a bigger body. Wiseman, of course, is a center. Is this one of those drafts where, at least right now, it could come down to what a team needs at that top spot?
Yeah. I think I've alluded to this. I think we talked about this on a different podcast before, too, a little bit. But yeah, I mean, it's 100% like the type of thing where, you know, if you need a center and you're picking first and you have a guard, like, you might have to take James Wiseman or you trade down. It's not like a year where it's like, oh, there's Zion, I don't care who else is on our team, we need to take that guy. It's not like that. And it's going to sort of be in the eye of the beholder in that way. But I do think those are the three guys that have sort of emerged as real candidates for number one. You know, I would be surprised if it's not one of those guys. Again, it's not a great year to have to make that decision. And, you know, with, I think, the 2021 draft, people are starting to talk more about that. I think you're going to see teams try to defer on their 2020 picks if they can, you know, trade this year's pick for a pick next year. I think you'll see teams explore those types of possibilities and that type of structure. It's still so early, but that is kind of how it feels right now. You know, we always say it's a bad draft, but then it's kind of early to label a draft that. But the lack of excitement this year is definitely palpable just talking to people.
All right, I'm going to take a break for a minute to tell you listeners about a great offer from Health IQ. Do you average 8 hours of sleep per night? Check. Eat a quality plant-based diet? Check. Exercise 4 more times per week? Check. Basically, you're doing everything right to ensure you live a long life. Isn't it time you'd be financially rewarded for your commitment to a healthy lifestyle? Look in the mirror. You probably look good. If you don't, work harder. You are doing everything right for your health today, but if you're not planning for the what-ifs of tomorrow, then it's time you do. The problem is, historically and rather ironically, the health conscious have overpaid and subsidized those who are less health conscious. It's not a conspiracy. It's just how life insurance works. Introducing Health IQ. Health IQ uses science and data to secure lower rates for people like you on their life insurance. If you're a runner or a cyclist, if you're into CrossFit or any other type of athlete, even a committed weekend warrior, if you're a vegetarian or vegan, then you deserve to be rewarded for your hard work with more affordable life insurance rates. Health IQ can save you up to 41% because physically active people have significantly lower risk for heart disease, cancer, and diabetes. And Health IQ is not just a lead generator. They take the customer through the entire process of applying, and the policy is underwritten by one of our top insurance partners. But these savings are exclusive to Health IQ. You won't find them anywhere else, and you must qualify to get a special rate. To see if you qualify, go to healthiq.com/manix to take the proprietary Health IQ quiz. Depending upon your score, as well as other related qualifying factors, you can save up to 41% on your life insurance premiums compared to other providers. Again, that's healthiq.com/manix to let them know we sent you, and then start the process with the Health IQ quiz. There's no commitment, and you'll learn even more about the potential opportunities to be rewarded for your commitment to living healthy. One more time, that's healthiq.com/manix. You know, we've talked a little bit in the past about LaMelo Ball, and he continues to be a really interesting name in the draft. And I guess maybe more intriguing now that he's going to be out for a little while with that foot injury. I mean, how big a deal is that to NBA people that you know, he'll be out, I think, at least another few weeks?
Yeah.
And who knows?
You know, I don't think it really is going to matter that much with regard to his stock. I mean, you know, you saw RJ Hampton, who's, you know, playing in the NBL, you know, he's also missing time. And look, these guys are banged up, I guess. You know, I don't know how badly they're injured. It's not my job to say. But, you know, if you are dinged up and you sit a month, it's like not the worst thing as far as protecting your draft stock, right? So, you know, teams have seen, I think with LaMelo, you know, he was starting to play better right before he sat out. So, you know, if anything, at least he'd left, you know, whether or not he comes back, I don't know. But he did kind of go out on a high note, relatively speaking. It's tricky just because the body of work isn't that big, and you know he had a game where he shot 1 of 11 from three, you know, against Hampton. So it's like it's not ideal, and it just makes this draft even more complicated trying to parse, you know, what we're seeing from guys like that.
I mean, do you look at a guy like LaMelo as, you know, people obviously watch his brother play, and we've talked about this a little bit in the past, but how close is he to the type of player that Lonzo is? Are they completely different type of point guards, or are there similarities there?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, and I think that's what people are going to have to try to figure out. You know, if you take LaMelo with the top three pick, are you, you know, asking for some of the same problems that have, you know, happened with Lonzo in the NBA, where, you know, he doesn't really get downhill, he doesn't really threaten to create his own shot, he's really just spotting up for threes around the perimeter, but he's not like an incisive playmaker. I think those are all valid questions. I do see some of the same things. I mean, LaMelo's bigger. You know, I hate to keep comparing them because it's not entirely fair, but their style of play is similar enough that you kind of, at some point, it just becomes an obvious discussion. But LaMelo's bigger. You know, he's better handling the ball. Right now, he's much craftier off the dribble than Lonzo ever was. So I think the question is just, is that cosmetic, or is that really going to be something that helps him? Because he's not shooting well from outside. He has trouble getting all the way to the rim and finishing through contact. And his, you know, his shot selection hasn't been great. You know, he's putting up great numbers in terms of counting stats, but this team's not winning. So, you know, it's just the same debate. And I do think that seeing Lonzo struggle in some of the same ways, you know, to get a foothold in the NBA, you know, if Lonzo is just a good backup, which is fine, maybe, but, you know, if you look at LaMelo, I mean, he's probably going to be better than that, but I think it will give people pause. And I think you have to. I mean, it's part of the conversation there.
You know, it's interesting with LaMelo that, you know, there was a lot of uproar when his father pulled him out of school before, like early in his junior year of high school. It doesn't seem like he's been adversely affected at all. And maybe he's even benefited from playing against, you know, different levels of competition, first in Lithuania and now playing in that that international league. I mean, do you think he's – I mean, is this any kind of sign of things to come maybe with – is LaMelo kind of a precursor to, you know, his success maybe leading to other guys following similar paths?
Yeah, that's going to be interesting to see. And, you know, whether or not this is great for – I mean, LaMelo didn't really have a choice, right? So, you know, for him this has been good, I think, just being seen, you know, just showing that he is a real talent. Granted, he's shooting 37% from the field, but as to whether guys will follow suit, I mean, there are kids right now, you know, a couple of – you know, top 10 type guys in the next year's class who I think are weighing that jump. And I think what can't be discounted is just the value that this provides to guys off the court, with, you know, building social media followings. There are, you know, financial implications of that, you know, brand building, whatever you want to say. I mean, you can argue maybe at college you can do the same thing, but yeah, you don't have to go to class if you go to Australia, you know. It won't shock me to see more guys go that route, but I think it really is a case-by-case basis, because you look at RJ Hampton, you know, he's just been okay. I think he has started playing a little bit better, but also in some ways was exposed by it at that level a little bit. And, you know, it's much better for guards, right? If you're a big and you're going over there, you're not really going to get fed. But you look at, I mean, the prominent guy who is thinking about it right now is Jalen Green, who is a five-star prospect, who will be a top, you know, five pick probably in the 2021 draft. So, you know, I think you'll continue to see guys weighing it. And just the interesting thing about it, too, is then, I mean, when one and done changes, it might be irrelevant, right? I mean, if guys can just go straight to the NBA, they're going to do that instead. So this might not be a debate that we end up having for much more than, like, another year, right? I mean, hard to say.
Yeah, if the one and done changes, we're all kind of assuming that's going to happen the next couple of years, but it's been kind of surprisingly quiet on that front. I know that's something they're still working on between the union and the league, but I haven't heard a lot of noise in the last, you know, couple of months really about that direction, how it's going to all shake out before 2021 or 2022, whenever they decide to make that move. I don't know if you've heard anything different, but I haven't. I think people are still expecting it to change the next couple of years, but it's been kind of quiet on that front.
Yeah, everyone thinks it's happening. I think it's kind of a game of chicken right now. I think the question is just whether it will be, you know, for a while everybody thought it would be in time for the 2022 draft where they would, you know, let the high school guys in. I mean, I think it's possible that ends up being 23, but I think that's still up in the air. And it's just it is a big bargaining chip right now, because I think the league wants it, and what they also want is the medical information, and I think that's sort of like the big thing. It's like, you know, if we're gonna let the high school kids in, you know, we need to, you know, be able to know some basic things about them. We need to have medical, and then if that extends to those other guys, well, you know, it's a thing that players you know value, and the Players Association I think values keeping that information close to the vest, selectively, right? So I think that's sort of where, from my understanding, is sort of where the discussions are kind of centered right now, and that's what I think what they're trying to solve.
Yeah, I mean, look, the union's going to have to give something back. I mean, I think Adam Silver is far more motivated to change this rule than his predecessor David Stern was, but they're going to want some kind of concession back in return. I mean, the union's desire for it are for obvious reasons. You want to get to that second contract as fast as possible and, you know, give guys more earning power over the course of their career, but they're going to have to give something back. And the medical stuff, you're right, I think is at the top of the NBA's list of things to get in these negotiations. All right, let's talk about a couple of other guys that are interesting names on your board. Tyrese Haliburton is one that is one of those guys I didn't know too much about coming into this whole draft process. 6'5 guard out of Iowa State, great passer. But I didn't know a lot about him, you know, before the start of this season. How is he? Has he risen pretty fast on your board? And what do you like about him?
Yeah, so I've kind of been in love with Tyrese, in love with his game for like almost a year. But did I think he would be this good this fast? No. It's funny. I was in Ames, Iowa, at Iowa State last December, and I was there to see Talen Horton Tucker, who at the time was a potential first round pick, ended up going in the second. But you know, you go there, and you know their team was, they had a lot of decent guys on the team, and then, you know, I walked away. I was like, who is this guy? I had no idea who Haliburton was. And just, you know, the way he passed the ball, how much fun he was having sort of in the process. And just there was just something about him that sort of stuck out. So I ranked him for us like last January, but it was like sort of like a fringe first round because it was like, well, we don't know. You know, he was not a featured offensive player at all. You know, he was hardly shooting and hardly really dribbling. He was just a conduit for the offense. So last year he was a guy where teams, you know, maybe if you're picking at the end of the first round or early second, you try to convince this guy to come out and, hey, we'll pick you, right? Like that's probably what I would have done last year. But then, you know, he goes to the U19 World Championships over the summer. He's the best player on the USA team that also included Cade Cunningham. You know, Tyrese was you know, handling lead point guard duties, which he did not do as a freshman. And then, you know, I think clearly the trajectory was pointing upward coming into the season, and now you've sort of seen him take off. I mean, granted, Iowa State's not very talented this year, but they have been really fun to watch just because of him and the way he sort of flies all over the court. He does so many different things. So for me, I mean, I think that's a pretty safe bet. And in this draft, just given how uncertain a lot of these guys are who are potential top 10 picks, I mean, I would feel comfortable with him just because I think you know what you're getting. And, you know, I think he's going to continue to get better. Now, I guess what people are debating is whether or not he's better off as a full-time point guard or as, you know, a shooting guard who plays off of another guard and is a secondary playmaker. You know, however you want to use him, I think he can do that. So he may not be a star, but I also don't think it's crazy to think that with how much he's improved, you know, he could end up being one of the better you know, value guys of this draft, because he'll probably go a little bit later just based on some of those concerns. Like, I think he'll probably end up in more of that mid to late lottery range. But I put him 5 for us, and that's just a reflection of how I feel about him.
Let me ask you, too. I mean, one of the things that we've been talking about in this podcast and it's been in the news the last couple of weeks is just, look, Golden State is bad right now. They are really bad, and there's a great chance they wind up with a top 3 pick, maybe the number 1 overall pick in the draft. I mean, is this... I mean, I look at a guy like James Wiseman as being a natural fit for them. They don't have a ton of size in their front court, and if you assume that Steph and Clay and Draymond are back and D'Angelo Russell's either back or traded for something that they need, I mean, is this the kind of draft where you know, you add a James Wiseman? Is he, how big a difference maker is a guy like that?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think there's a variance of opinion as far as to how ready Wiseman's going to be to, like, really, really help you, like, if I'm Golden State, you know, if I walk away taking him, I'm okay, because he does fit a need. But at the same time, are you really going to try to drop a 19-year-old rookie onto that team with, you know, Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Draymond and trying to win a title? Like, probably not, right? I think to me, the scarier scenario, if I'm the rest of the league, is what if Golden State, you know, finds a suitable trade partner for that pick, you know, flips it to get another star. Combine, you know, finds a way financially to make it work. Maybe you attach D'Angelo Russell's salary plus the pick, and you, you know, get a close to max level guy. I mean, that to me is what's frightening. The fact that they could sort of recharge their team in that way, more so than if they draft a rookie, just because I don't think there's anyone in this draft who's going to put the Warriors over the top that they need, if that makes sense. And their window is not going to suddenly become a long term one. I mean, these guys are going to come back and they're going to go for it again.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I mean, that's the doomsday scenario for every team out there is that, like you said, the Warriors take Russell, who's got a max contract and is playing like an all-star this year, and add the number 3 pick in the draft, and there's going to be a ton of top-tier guys that you can probably get for that. I mean, off the top of my head, I can't think of, you know, I'm looking at Portland. I mean, Damian Lillard doesn't make any sense, or McCollum doesn't make any sense, but that type of player you could get. They could even afford to, you know, they could give more value out in a deal if it gets them back somebody that fits their window. I mean, those guys, Clay and Steph and Draymond, early 30s, you're looking at like a 3-year window. You can get something real back in return that can create Super Team 2.0 in Golden State, and all of a sudden you're looking at another run of championships for the Warriors. I'm with you there. That is to me the scariest thing for everybody around the league. If they're able to find a trade partner that gives them, like, again, they don't need backcourt help necessarily, but let's say Bradley Beal becomes available in Washington, like, that type of player would be just a game changer for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is going to be one of the more interesting subplots as we do get closer. You know, at least we kind of know now, we're far enough into the season that we know who the really bad teams are, so we kind of know who's going to have a top 5 to 7 pick. You know, granted, this year may not be worth as much, but again, the closer we get to the draft, you know, the more valuable these picks become, just because once teams figure out who they can get at which spot and how they value guys, you know, these dynamics always change and teams always make moves closer to the draft, just because in lieu of better things to worry about sometimes, right? I mean, you you know, you hope that this guy's the solution. So, yeah, I think that's definitely something to watch, is just how creative they are willing to get. Because, yeah, if I'm them, I'm all in. And I'm totally happy to flip that pick if I can get something better.
Yeah, no question. All right, give me some of the guys, or even just one or more, guys you're kind of watching over these next few weeks. I mean, we're probably a month plus away from conference tournaments and whatnot, but give me some of the guys that you're watching who might make some moves over the next month.
Yeah, I think one guy who has been of interest to me, and has been talked about, but I think has surprised teams too with what he's been doing, is Isaac Okoro from Auburn, who, you know, I saw him. They played a couple games at Barclays, and I was really impressed with him as far as freshmen are concerned. You know, he was ranked lower than a lot of these other guys, and he's just, you know, miles ahead of some of the other freshman wings that were more hyped than him. So, you know, you look at him, I mean, someone compared him sort of like to like the idea of like a OG Anunoby type guy, not as big, but sort of the same defensive type versatility. Okoro is interesting just because his feel for the game is so strong. You know, he can't really shoot, but if he becomes an average shooter, which I don't think is crazy, then he's going to add so much value in other areas. So, and I also think Auburn has a pretty good chance to win the SEC. So if that happens and those things sort of coalesce, I mean, I think he can end up sneaking into the top 10. Right now I have him late lottery. But, you know, he's one of those guys who I think has room to sort of move up. Another guy people have talked a lot about is Obi Toppin from Dayton, who I saw him play last weekend in Phoenix, and yeah, I mean he's pretty legit. I don't know if for me he's like a clear cut lottery guy, but I think there is safety just in his offensive skill set. So I think people are going to talk about him like that. You know, he'll be another guy who is interesting. You know, Dayton is probably going to win their conference. They're a really really legit good team. Could be a second weekend team in the tournament. So. You know, top end, you know, he's a big who can catch lobs and hit corner threes and set screens and sort of, he can fit a lot of different spots on the floor offensively. And that's so valuable to have a big that can do that now, just in terms of what it means for different lineups you can play. So I think he's a guy too who has really sort of blown up in a big way around the league.
Let me ask you before we finish up here, one of the names that's interesting on your board is McCorm Maker, who is a prep school kid right now, but I think people listening, you know the last name, Thon Maker, of course, a former lottery pick, hasn't really panned out as a pro, bounced around a little bit going from Milwaukee to Detroit. But this is his cousin, who is not quite eligible yet for the draft, but as you write, teams are preparing as if he'll be on the draft board. I mean, how does he kind of project as a prospect? And does the fact that Thon, you know, was I don't want to call him a flop as a lottery pick, but he didn't really distinguish himself as a lottery pick. The fact that he hadn't really panned out, does that impact what teams are thinking about McCorm?
Yeah, I'm actually going to see him play tomorrow in Las Vegas. I think there are going to be teams that go to that. You know, teams are definitely curious with the way this class is shaped up. You know, any thread of a potential first round pick, and you got to go see. And you know, I saw him play over the summer at an Under Armour camp in August, and you know, I think physically he fits on the NBA court. He is more skilled and a little bit, like, physically more capable than Thon. Like, if you remember when Thon was a rookie, you know, how skinny he was. And he's added some muscle, but not a ton. You know, McCourt, I think, has benefited from being around Thon. It's his younger cousin, right? So he's benefited from having better access, I think, to the weight room. You know, his body is different. His body is sort of bigger and stronger, more of like a legit five type guy. And he can shoot the three. He can pass. He can handle. You know, how well does he do all of those things with respect to the NBA level? I think that's what people are trying to figure out. But there's definitely enough there that, you know, I think there's a chance he ends up in the first round. But I think this is going to be a big week for him. You know, he'll be watched on consecutive days by different teams. And, you know, so I'll go to see him too. And, you know, definitely somebody who could end up in the first round just off the tools. But, again, with these makers, you know, the middle one, Mature, is in the G League right now, was not very good at the same stage. So it's always kind of a mixed bag.
Yeah, we'll see if any of them pan out as high-level NBA players. Jeremy, safe travels, man. Enjoy these tournaments, and I'm sure we'll catch up again a few times well before the draft, man. Thanks for joining me.
All right, man. Catch you soon.
At Humana, our Medicare Advantage plans give you coverage and care you can count on, along with guided support to help you feel your best. You could have a plan with a $0 premium or an all-in-one plan that may include medical and prescription coverage, as well as routine dental, vision, and hearing. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.